Hello and welcome to the Camping Crew Podcast with Chris and Aaron.
Hi everybody, welcome to episode 185 of the Camping Crew Podcast. I'm Aaron Burchell.
And I'm Chris Byrne.
Remember, it's meant to be a fun podcast. We are just enthusiasts on what we discuss on the podcast and just our own personal views. Although, we do look into things that you ask us to look into.
If you'd like to support the podcast, and if you can afford to, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/thecampingcrew. I want to say a big thank you to Dean Z, who sponsored us as well. He had a note, they're a great podcast. He shits out from Waterford City, so quite nearby us. And also a big thank you to the McNamaras, who contributed as well.
Thank you for that. Good news is what we're starting with, and then we're going to follow up with a bit of sad news. Friday's Charlie and Me video was from the New Ayres in Clonmel. It's in a place called Shore Island, and it's great to see it. It's absolutely brilliant to see town councils and town boroughs coming on board. There are 12 to 15 pitches, but there's an overflow as well. There's actually parking for 20 vans, but 15 of them are legal pitches with the space. But if more vans come up, there are other spaces where you can park. Just use your head and don't park on top of each other. It will be €10 a night. But for the moment, the meter is only taking €3.50 for 24 hours. And that's allowed until they rejig one of the meters.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And I think they have all the grey and black disposals and all that.
Three freshwater tanks. Now, at the moment, there are hoses on the freshwater tanks, on the freshwater taps. They're taking off two of the hoses because the Health and Safety Act have said typhoid. If the taps aren't being run, typhoid could develop in the hose. So the one hose that will be left is for washing down the grey area. And then the other two taps, you just have to bring your own bit of hose for the drinking water. Yeah. And the black water goes into a massive big tank and the tractor sucks it out every couple of weeks. So it's brilliant. It was, okay, this weekend just gone, the Busking Festival was on. So it was full. It was absolutely full of campers. And I took a spin down then. Video went out Friday. I went down Sunday afternoon and there was 12 vans there. And it was great to see it. Everybody was behaving themselves, which was brilliant to see.
Yeah, I see some pictures on some of the Facebook groups as well. I think the Clonmel mayor was down shaking hands with all the campers, welcoming them to Clonmel as well.
He was. He's a nice chap.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, it adds a good PR for it. And look, as we said last time, just, you know, make sure to use it as much as possible and they'll either expand on it. And it's right in the heart of
It's literally a 5 minute, exactly 5 minutes, and you're on Main Street. If you go out the gates and go right, you're on Main Street. If you go left, another 10 minute walk, you're onto the Blue Way, and in 2 hours you can be in Carrigan Shore. You can cycle, canoe, walk, kayak. It's. I think of Cove as brilliant, but I think the Clonmel one is as good because it's right in the town centre.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two different breed of kind of campers as well. So I know we have like the wild campers and the campsite campers, but then I think there's another way of categorizing. There's people who like to go into the countryside miles away from towns and villages.
They're wild campers. But
like even on campsites that are not near towns and cities, like I, you know, whether I'm near a town or a city or a village, doesn't really bother me.
No.
If we're going somewhere remote, we'll be self-sufficient. But I know there's a lot of people who like, you know, the restaurant life, the nightlife, go have a good point, not have to travel far and get back safely to where they're parking up. Like, I think that's why that air in Kilkenny as well is quite popular as well, because it's right in the heart, like that one in Clonmel,
like in Cove,
that matter as well. You know, they're right in an urban area, you know.
On the Charlie and Me video, which I only recorded on Thursday because I was actually in town and it's all explained on the video, that video, I'm going to say, has gone viral for us. We like to get 1,000 views within 24 hours. We're now today, when we're recording this podcast on the Wednesday, on 5,965 views. It's the most, it's not the most views we have on a video because we have videos up there with 13,000. It's the most quickest views. Within 96 hours, we had 5,000 views. So thank you to everybody who took a look at that. Keep passing it on. Tag us. Pass it out there. Get it out to your friends. But it is a great air. Please do use the facilities. Take your rubbish with you. Let's just get more of them in other towns because it is. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and I know these areas, there are more areas popping up, places which I'm sure we'll cover kind of in later podcasts as we go on as well. It's just great to see these little extra spaces popping up for people to camp out and go and do their shopping or go and have something to eat or go out for a drink or a meal at night and something and not have to travel back. It's great. So keep them coming.
So I mentioned we had good news. That's the good news. Here's the bad news. We got news that Curragh Chase campsite is to close forever on September the 4th. I was on to Warren when I saw that in one or two of the Facebook groups. I gave Warren a buzz and I was chatting to him, and he just wanted me to say thank you to everybody who has supported him over the 5 years. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He said Teagasc might take it over because they own the land, or they might put it up for re-release. Or they may close it. He really doesn't know. But on September 4th, he closes the gates on Curragh Chase Caravan and Camping Park. Warren, we just want to wish you the best of luck with your endeavours, whatever you take on next, because that was one success story. A lot of work in 5 years, and it's one of my favourite sites, and I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, and I know a lot of people speak very warmly of that campsite on the different social media sites as well, all the time as well. So yeah, look, I'm sure it'll be sadly missed by a lot of people, but you know, maybe somebody might take it over, hopefully.
We'll watch this space. Right, let's move on to campsites and stopovers. Can the Man left a lengthy review about the getaway in Dungarvan on campsitereview.com. So I'm going to bring that to you, and then I'm going to sit back and more or less let you take the rest of the show. So Cat the Man, campsitereview.com, as you know, is our sister website. We have a forum there. It's free. And here's what he had to say about the getaway in Dungarvan. We had an excellent break last weekend. Hillary could not have been more helpful. Hillary, by the way, is the lady who owns the getaway in Dungarvan. There are 12 hard stands for campervans, possibly do caravans as well. No, they don't. When we were there, there was only 3 campervans on the stands, and there were a few tents camping every night. There are also 3 glamping pods and 2 glamping yurts. Our friends rented the 4-berth glamping pod, and it was fantastically kitted out. Toilets, showers, kitchens with fridge, microwave, heaters in case of the cold weather, double bed on a couch that folds out into a double bed. And in my opinion, it was a bit small for 4 adults, but ideal for 2 adults and 2 children. The site is well kitted out. Each bay has a power supply. We didn't check the voltage. It's 10 amps, by the way, but I had no trips. There is a light there that illuminates automatically after dark, and you can find your way around your stand. As had been said by Aaron, there are 2 showers that also have toilets. One of the toilets was marked out of order when we were there, but lots and lots of hot water for the showers. They're run by gas boilers. There's also a separate toilet beside the grey water disposal area, again with hot water in the washhand basin. No shortage of toilet paper either. Grey water disposal area is fantastic. It's wide and it slopes into the drain grill from all 4 sides. There's also fresh spring water supply in this area. The black water disposal, it's unusual. It's a high AJ with a sewer lid, for use of a better word, with 2 handles to assist the removal. There's a hose there to wash down after use, all at a comfortable height. The only thing I thought strange was that the sink for the washing down of the dishes with hot water was right beside the black water disposal. I very nearly placed the sewer lid on the draining board of the sink before realizing what I was doing. There's a fantastic facility called the Nook and the Cranny, which is like 2 old sheds converted. There's cooking facilities there with a microwave. There's a hot plate and even a coffee machine. Lots of seating inside and outside for dining or just chillaxing. There are books for sharing and board games for playing, and nice rural rustic decor. One thing I did notice, that not many kids. I presume that's because they don't really have a playground. Though there was an area supposedly with goats that you can feed with grass, but there was none of them there the weekend we were there. There's also a small pond where you can let your dog off on a lead.
Pound.
Oh, pound, because I was going to say that's not the pond. I read that earlier and thought it was pond, and I went, that's the poo patch. There's also a small pound where you can let the dog out off the lead. It's very, very small, but it's nice. There seems to be dog friendly, but they must be kept on a lead at all times. In my opinion, it's a great place for anybody wanting to do walking, cycling in the area of the Greenway. We found it brilliant just to chill out and relax. There is a taxi service available from Dungarvan, about 15, 20 minutes away. We didn't use it as we had non-drinking drivers with us. We were also told that the Indian restaurant and chippers in Dungarvan deliver out to the site. We visited a local hostelry, which is about a 10-minute drive, called Bridgie Terry's. This is a must for everyone for superb food. It's very reasonably priced, excellent choices of beers, wines, etc. There was music there on the Sunday night. Oh, I forgot to say, it was €30 a night for the campervan, including electricity. We love the getaway, in fairness.
Yeah, no, we've had many nights there. you know, the facilities are brilliant. You know, it's close by for us as well. It's, as I said, we like to go away kind of rural as well, because there's not really anything within walking distance from. So you would have to drive. But if you just, it's called a getaway for a reason.
Yeah, to get away and breathe is her slogan, and I love it. On the Blackwater, the camper's kitchen is an extension to the toilet block. And that was the only place she could put it. So it's not by design. So bear in mind, if you take the lid off the Blackwater, put it on the ground, not on the
table. Maybe if you are washing your dishes, wipe down the counter before you put your dishes up on it, just in case you don't know what the person before you has done.
Right, let's move on to projects and gadgets, just to give you something to do. Then we come back on to the bit that we're skipping, and then we'll do the interview that you're going to tell us about as well.
Very good. So we got an email from Darren, who's a regular contributing to the podcast. He says, "Hi, Chris. We had a great time at Forest Fest recently. The weather didn't really play ball, but it wasn't too bad either. Didn't spoil the weekend. Had a day on Inishmore in the Aran Islands, which is brilliant, and then to Achill for a few days, our favourite destination. Well, at the festival, I met a guy at the cassette emptying station who was obviously struggling with what to do. Turns out they hired a motorhome for the weekend and didn't know what to do at the emptying station. I think he was about to try and empty it through the input flap rather than the outlet spout. Anyway, I gave him a quick guide on how to operate it. He admitted he hadn't paid attention when the hire company had gone through the motions, as it were. Got me thinking about another couple of things that maybe people aren't aware of. Now, I'm going to read out two really great tips here, Aaron, and I absolutely was not aware of these either. And we have our van for what, I suppose, Janie, 16, 17 years mm-hmm. now at this stage, you know?
Yeah.
So the first one is that the spout that rotates can be removed. And I presume this is on most cassettes.
Which, and this is on the toilet cassette you're talking about.
The toilet cassette, yeah. Which will leave a bigger, less twisty exit route. So when you twist out the spout, if you twist it all the way right around, as far as it goes, you should be able to wiggle it loose and it should come off. And this is for the Thetford cassettes, at least. So handy if you need an extra bit of space to empty it out. He said, another, if you're ever in a situation where your cassette is full and it's full over its max. Now, I hope nobody's eating. If you are, you might want to
pause,
finish your dinner, wait an hour and then come back to the podcast. Mm-hmm. So he says, if your cassette is full and over its max, where the bowl won't empty, you don't want to pull the cassette out, or will there be a lot of cleaning up to do in the cassette compartment? What you can do is you can open the access door to the cassette, and leaving the cassette in place, very important, with the flush trap door opened, again, very important, turn your spout out the way, mm-hmm. and with a suitable container ready, then open the spout, ready to catch the overspill into your disposable container. Mm-hmm. This should drain down to the top level of the cassette, allowing it to be removed without too much mess. And don't forget to close the flush trap first. Hope this comes in really useful for people. Happy camping, Darren. Well, Darren, as I said earlier, two things I had not known about. And definitely I will remember those if I'm ever stuck. Particularly the twisting the spout all the way and for that to come off. If you've got a particularly heavy blockage or something, that's going to allow you access to empty that more than the spout, would you know?
Three things. One, this conversation has gone right down the toilet. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
Two, I hope I never have to do either of them. And three, Darren, seek help. Anyway, I never knew that about the neck of the no. I've often just turned it, opened the lid, and then you used to pour. I've never been in a tight situation for pouring, but now I can see if ever there was one, removing that spout could possibly be a good idea.
Yeah.
And always remember the little button on the top of the cassette. Push that every time you're emptying it. It stops blowback, splashback, and you don't want that.
With kids, they tend to use loads of extra toilet paper.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've been kind of in a situation now where it took a couple of rinse throughs to be able to flush all of that.
To flush it out, yeah. So I've been in a situation where my cassette has been full, and that was really in the B-Ball because it was a much smaller cassette than the Heimer. Now, I have been in that situation where it was full, but I never have to do that overflow thing.
No, it's not pleasant.
But look, thank you, Darren. Great tips to have, and hopefully, Darren, you've never had to do it either. Fridays, Charlie and me, I might have a video this Friday because I actually might be going camping tomorrow night. But at the moment, we've no video this week at all, because the van, the VW van, the Wednesday builds, the VW is going in for its DOE next Tuesday, which is, I think, the 22nd of August of this year. And I have fingers and toes crossed for that. And I will have a video that Wednesday of whether it passes or not. And then hopefully, if it does pass, we'll be out making videos for Fridays from then on. So I'm really looking forward to it. So no Charlie and me videos today or this Friday.
Yeah, we'll be crossing our fingers and toes. We've waited long enough for this T3 now.
I hope it'll pass, but if it fails, it's going to be on very little, Chris, because the only thing I'm actually thinking that it might fail, my mechanic said it won't, is the brakes. I'm not comfortable with the brakes. And he went, it's a 1989 VW. They didn't have the technology your Heimer has. So he thinks it'll pass.
There has to be an allowance for that. Yeah,
so, there has to be that it's almost vintage. So look, fingers crossed, next Wednesday, this day week, there will be a video regardless whether I'm saying happy face or sad face. So
I was going to suggest, if you see a video next Wednesday, it means he passed. If there's nothing up.
No, it's going up regardless. Yeah, it's going up regardless. No, okay. I'm being honest with the builder. So look, fingers crossed.
We're all hoping for a positive result. We can't wait to see the new camper out on the road.
Yeah. Please God. Right. You have an interview. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So a good few weeks back, I asked about lithium batteries and did anybody use lithium batteries, how to get on, what's their experience on them? You know, I kind of knew the basics of what they were about. So I reached out to ask, has anybody done this? What was their experience? And a chap called Brian Ruttle reached out and got in touch. So, you know, he wrote me a long, long message about his van conversion, what he did, but I just said, look, this is going to be so much better rather than me reading out a long email to do it in an interview format. So I had a chat with Brian about his camper, how we converted, how we went about it, and his experience and his setup with lithium. I'm here with Brian Ruttle. Brian reached out after a recent podcast we had, and we spoke about lithium batteries. So Brian sent us lots of information and pictures and all of that. But rather than reading out a long email, I thought it would be a good idea maybe to get Brian to tell us about his conversion in an interview format. So we'll start with a quick fire round. Brian, do you want to maybe introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, my name is Brian Ruttle. I'm based down here in Adair in Limerick. And I suppose I came to this van build this time, maybe last year. Actually, just last July, I bought a Volkswagen Crafter. I suppose after procrastinating for a number of years and dreaming about building a van, I took the plunge and I bought a 2016 Crafter. The reason I picked the Crafter, I suppose, if you want to start there, I suppose, it was to do with the size. I'm not the smallest guy, I'm about 6'5". So height of the van and the length of the van was very important.
Absolutely.
So that's where I started. So now there's other vans that were an option, but the Crafter was seen to be the highest one by a small amount. It's just maybe a few shorter of my height.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you're an engineer by trade, Brian, are you?
I am actually. I'm actually a design engineer by trade. I worked in a place called Molex in Shannon on electrical connectors for 23 years. So yeah, I have a varied background in design and engineering, but I also have done welding and tool making. So I have a varied background. So I have a few skills under my belt, shall we say?
And more importantly, all the right skills. I was going to say, yeah, like being able to do kind of the electrics and the welding and the physical. So I'm gathering by speaking with you over email and on the phone and that you know, there's no kind of project that you're not afraid to get stuck into. To plead opposite to me, I'd rather get somebody else to do all of the hard work. So before we get into the nitty gritty, like, how long would you say it took you to do your van, say, start to finish?
I spent about 9 months, I suppose, really on it. I suppose after about 5 months, we could just go away in it. Went away one night for a wedding. They were stuck for accommodation. But all I had was the bed and the toilet built at that stage.
Okay.
The layout and first fix was done. But yeah, you're looking at, it's fairly full on for 9 months. I mean, you know, a friend of mine said to me, you know, how do I find the time? I said, I give up watching television. He replied to me, did you watch a lot of television?
So, you know, Netflix and all of that.
It was totally consumed, I'm afraid I was.
Imagine. Okay, so let's get into the nitty gritty. So before you cut any metal or stripped any wires, like, what preparation did you do before you started anything?
I suppose I approached it like I would an engineering project in my last job, I suppose. So that's where you kind of plan out, I suppose, if you fail to plan and plan to fail, I suppose, is the kind of motto we just live by, where you plan out everything. So you have to, first of all, I started on what did I want to achieve here? So what was I building it for? Was it for a full family, for four people, for two? In my case, it was two. And then what are my needs and wants, I suppose, is the next step in that. So I wanted to be off the grid. I wanted to be able to have a full solar system, not having to plug in if I so wished. So that was the kind of few things I wanted. Obviously, my height was an issue for me because I need the bed, had to go the length of the van because the widthwise won't work, which is a problem. I didn't want the van to be too long or too wide. So they kind of honed my choices down to either maybe like a Fiat Ducato or a Sprinter or a Crafter. Hard to find vans at the time, actually, when I was looking. I suppose there's a lot of...
Still hard to find.
It probably still is hard to find them, yeah, and they're quite expensive as well. But I eventually found one in Offaly, actually, in Peter... can't think of his name now, but so yeah, to the 2016 model Crafter is what I eventually picked up, and so that's kind of the process, I suppose, that I would have I did many designs, even on PowerPoint, just taking screenshots from the internet and so on of different designs of vans and drawn boxes for beds and kitchens and so on.
Sketched it out, had an idea of the capacity of the inside of the van, and did you like was prepared in any way? Did you have to strip it and line it? And
I would advise actually everyone to do that, is to literally strip it back to the bare bones, back to the metal, and see what's going on behind the things, because you'll find things that are not perfect. First of all, maybe rust, or in my case, I found even some of the panels were glued initially, but over time the glue had given way, and that caused a lot of vibration noises and so on. And also, I suppose, I was putting in the sound deadening and I suppose I procrastinated a long time on that one, whether I would do it or not, but it does work. I must admit now it makes a very quiet van afterwards. So that's something. It's not massive money, just a bit of time, I suppose. It takes
probably helps with the insulation as well. Can the insulation and deadening probably work together, do they?
They do. They certainly do. But even insulation or the deadening on its own, I suppose, until I actually closed the back door one day when I was almost finished, and I stopped and I opened it and closed it again to listen to it. It was like that clunky sound, and no noise, you know. It was incredible, actually. I couldn't believe it would make such a difference, but it did.
And what did you use for sound deadening?
It was a kill mat, was called. So it's a kind of like a tar mat that sticks onto the panels. Right. And you only put on about a third of the size of the panel. So what it does is it just changes the frequency of the resonance, how it vibrates, shall we say. So it just slows down the vibration, and then you don't get that noise that you've...
That's brilliant,
familiar with empty vans, you know.
So you did all your preparation, so you kind of knew before you cut anything exactly what your layout was, how you want to go about it. So I'd imagine kind of... all of the wiring or anything you want hidden had to go in first. And
I suppose like a house, you know, you have your first six wiring, your first six plumbing, your fixtures and fittings, and then your second fixing, right? So again, you plan, and you really do need to plan these things, because space is a premium. You haven't got the luxury of space, so you know, and to run a wire afterwards can be very difficult if it's running through a shower or running a heater hose or something like this. It's very difficult.
And how much of the interior did you make as opposed to buy? Like, I'm thinking cabinets and cupboards and beds and sinks and, you know.
Bar buying sheet material, that's all I bought. So there was some, say, corner units, aluminium profile for the corner of the units that I used. And then I just bought just the pieces, like the chargers or the timber and so on. But yeah, literally, I have a full workshop here, so I can skill saws and table saws and all that kind of stuff, routers, whatnot. So I can make all this stuff myself, which is, I suppose, part of the project, I suppose. Yeah. The idea was to build it myself.
And like, weight is a big issue. Did you go for like a light type of timber? Or...
Yeah, I looked into that a lot, and there is a lot of them. You can buy a light type ply, right? 15 millimeter ply, actually, what it is, 50, out of the UK. First of all, it's quite difficult to get. But when I looked at the mats of it, I suppose, I looked at, okay, if I use 12 millimeter of standard Medite material, it was a similar weight to the lightweight 15 mil stuff. So I suppose what I'd done really was, where I couldn't use 12 mil. I used obviously 18 mil, actually, standard chipboard, that type material that you'd buy here in most suppliers. And where I could, I use either 12 or even 3 mil, depending if I could get away with it. Because weight is a big problem. Just, I suppose, on numbers of weights, the 3.5 ton is the maximum, right? So that's with everything, including the driver and a tank of diesel and water and batteries and the whole lot. So I knew I was starting off with a van that was a medium wheelbase, which was 2 ton. So I had 1.5 ton to play around with, I suppose, which is not bad. But I put in about 0.9 of a ton of weight into the, you know, and I was very, I watched the weight a lot. So yeah, it's something that if anyone is building a van and they want to go for, let's say, a long wheelbase, you have to be really, really careful with the items you add.
Did you fit a leave room for a toilet and a shower?
Yeah, so the layout is 2 seats in front with swivels on them, so they rotate. Then you have a toilet in the middle and a fixed bed in the back full time. It's set up for the bed. So you have your it's a traditional layout, I suppose. In front of the door, the sliding door is where your kitchen is. So that's where you have your sink and gas hob and so on. Other items is there's a gas Truma heater for hot water and the air heating. And then obviously we have a Victron solar power system set up as well. So that's kind of the layout. Just behind the driver's seat, obviously when it spins, there's also a bench seat. So you can sit 4 comfortably in it. Well, he only sleeps 2 on a bed. There's a king size bed at the back, basically. That's, I suppose, one of the tricks that I done was with the bed, because I was limited in space lint wise. I actually, at night time, there's a cushion goes in on top of the sink. So, say about 4 inches of the sink actually becomes part of my side of the bed, shall we say, which zips into the sponge mattress, the memory foam mattress.
Very clever, yeah. So, like, just an extra bit of comfort.
Yes, indeed.
You need to have a good sleep, so that's very clever, yeah. So, budget-wise, so you obviously the cost of the van, you purchased the van, but how much would you say the van to kit out would have cost you approximately?
I suppose initially, that's always a tricky one, because what level do you want to go to? And, you know, I suppose initially I thought maybe $5,000 might cover me, right? But then as your choices come up and you decide that, no, I'm going to go with a better solar inverter or a better whatever it is. So I think I spent about 10 to 12,000 on it in total at this stage. Now it is complete. It is finished to a high level. Like there's, you know, as I said, both seats swivel, there's side steps, there's a full Victron power system, and it runs off the grid. So yeah, it is fairly high in there, to be fair.
And did you do it, say, with say the approximate 12,000 start to finish, or did you do it to a certain point, stop and then use it and then change it? And
no, we used it once, as I mentioned, for a wedding, actually. We were just stuck for accommodation, but it wasn't finished. We had a bed and a toilet. That was it. The front of it wasn't done with no civil seats, and it had the power system, a very basic power system at the time. It wasn't fully finished, but it had enough for one night. I suppose I had Jerry rigged up the heating system and so on. It wasn't finished, because there's a lot of work, I suppose, when you start doing the gas system and so on. There's a lot of regulations that you have to follow and apply to make sure it's kept safe and so on. So I hadn't those done at the time, but as I said, for one night, yeah.
I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the electrical side of it. Specifically, you opted for the lithium batteries, and you were saying you wanted it to be fully off grid if you needed it to be. So maybe you might tell us about why you opted for the lithium ones, and what are the advantages from your point of view in your setup? Why you opted for that? I think you said you had solar there as well.
Sure. Yeah. So I suppose just to explain my system, as well, the electrical system for the van. So I put 350 watts of solar on the roof. So it's 2 Victron solar panels, 175 each. That feeds down to an MMPT, so your charge controller, which charges a battery. It doesn't matter what type of battery it charges. But in my case, I picked the lithium iron phosphate. So I suppose that was the first choice. I suppose how much solar and what battery choice I was doing. How much solar was to do with the space I had on top of the roof. I could fit more, but I felt that was more than enough than what should meet my demands. So again, that was worked out from, okay, I'll have so many lights, I'll have so much TV, I'll have so much power usage during the day and so on.
And you had your Excel out working out all your...
I had Excel working flat out trying to figure out what I needed, yeah. And yeah, it's just a matter of calculating it up really, you know. And once you have your appliances picked, like the fridge and your TV and so on, it's just a matter of working out how long each one will be running, you know. Why lithium ion phosphate in? So the lithium batteries, they're first of all, I suppose they're a quarter of the weight, half the size. And again, as we spoke earlier on, weight is always a problem with fans, trying to make sure we stay under the weight limits. So that was a big thing. Second thing was a 100 amp hour lithium battery gives you a full 100 amp hours of usage, where you need twice that on the other batteries. So cost-wise, they actually are better value. If, say, in my case, starting from scratch, right? That's why I had nothing beforehand, so I was doing everything. The downside with them then is that you can't have a split charge relay, which would be very common with this other battery, the AMG batteries or lead acid batteries, right? And the problem there is that it will work fine if the battery is charged and never discharges a lot. But if you charge down a lithium ion battery to almost zero, say, which is fine, there's no issue with the battery can cope, that's how it is designed. But the minute you start your van, if you have a split charge relay, it'll actually fry your rod later. So there's no resistance across the lithium ion phosphates. They'll take massive input current and they'll try and get that from the alternator, which in turn causes the problem. So you have to put in what's known as a DC-DC charger. It's another box you have to fit into your electrical system. That works very well. So there are your two control boxes, I suppose. Your solar charger charges it and your obviously DC-DC charger. Now, to be honest, I haven't used the DC-DC charger much. It's automatic, but I know it hasn't been used much. Maybe last weekend, which was quite dark, actually, on Saturday. On the Sunday, we were going for a drive, and I just noticed it's the first time it was actually charging the battery. So, again, I suppose for wintertime usage, that's where this might come in more useful. That then, obviously, feeds into your 12-volt system. I would have fitted a battery protect system, so and a monitor, so the DC shunt, so I can check my whole full system. And the last thing just to say on the lithium ion is that the other thing to be careful with them is that you can't charge them when it's below 0 degrees. You can use the power, but you can't charge them. So there's a Victron temperature sensor on the battery, which talks to the two control chargers, controls them, tells them, yeah, I'm okay to charge or not, as the case may be. So that's kind of the system. So yeah, I suppose there's an inverter for the 240. So I have a few 240 plugs. Again, that's just standard inverter, which charges, takes 12 volts and converts it up to 240 for your plug-in. And there's a Shore Power, which I've never used, built, but I've never used.
Which inverter all, like you could boil a kettle and run a toaster off it?
I fitted a 1600 watt. So maybe a small kettle, it wouldn't be a very big kettle. Yeah. But yeah, you could. Usually it's the lap charging the laptop. I have it the wife for her hair straighteners, this kind of thing. It's small items really, yeah. But you're not using. I suppose I don't use a kettle because I have gas, so I use a gas for the kettle. So a lot of my heating and cooking needs are done with the gas. If you were opting to not have gas and go electric hob and that kind of, you may need more batteries. That's how you
do. And even probably more important in a kettle then. Would it keep your fridge going, or is your fridge gas as well, purely gas?
No, the fridge I opted for electric, so 12 volts. It's a Dometic CR50. Lovely little unit now. It uses about 48 amps, or 48 watts continuously, basically, pretty much while it's running. So the solar system is more than adequate to keep that tapped up. As I say, I've never used more than 50% of the battery.
Really off-grid then, absolutely, yeah.
So that's it. Yeah, I was quite impressed now. Like everything, when you work these things out on the Excel sheet or whatever it is, you're always worried, you know, am I correct? Do I need more? So, but look, the advantages here is that you can add a second battery if you had to. You could add another solar panel also if you wanted to, you know, so, but it's not needed.
Yeah, you can kind of commoditize it, just build it up as you need it, or even take it down if you need it as well.
To be honest, no, I think anyone that has 350 watts of solar and this type setup, I don't see you're going to be using any more power. Not really, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you were going to start again from scratch, just to close out the interview, Brian, if you're going to just do it all from scratch? Is there anything that you might do differently? Or
I was talking to a friend of mine there lately. He had a Fiat Ducato bus, and actually just for set up for a wheelchair, so all the seats were taken out of it. So I actually noticed that I went in measuring it, and the width is actually a lot wider than the Crafter or the Sprinter. So that's actually quite a good van to convert. The sides are straight, I suppose, is how I describe it, where the Sprinter tapers in. And you lose a lot of width. So you could have a bed across the van in that case. Yeah, it's something I might look into in the future. But
another project down the road.
We're just going to enjoy the one we have, and we'll see. We'll take it from there. But yeah, I wouldn't change. I'd go with a very similar solar system. You could go for a cheaper components. I went with Efteling Victron, which is probably the Rolls Royce of the systems now, to be fair. But I like to be able to access on your phone with the Bluetooth. You can see where everything is. You can just history each day. You can see what power you used, what power you got in charging, and so on. So I suppose just from a fault finding or just checking the system, it makes it very easy for me to just open my phone. I can just check it there and then. So I like that part of it. So yeah, the Victron stuff is it's easy to use. It's very intuitive, I think. And yeah, you have a lot of access to the information afterwards.
When you got in touch with you, you sent me lots of pictures and images and stuff. Do you have something up, say, on Instagram, any of these pictures that people could go and kind of have a look? Or
I have actually a TikTok account. I was only using it for video storage and putting up a few videos of the van and so on and pictures of the solar system. So yeah, it is BRuttle001.
So in there you've got a couple of videos and that of your electrical system, I think, and your camper, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where you'll find some of the camper videos, and you can see actually the solar system, the Victron system, is up there as well.
I'll dig that out because I know you sent that to me and I'll connect it, and I'll share that out as well with the listeners. It's definitely worth checking out, so people can kind of visualize your setup as well. Look, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate you jumping on. Very interesting project. And certainly, if people are going to take anything away from this, as you said, you know, do your preparation beforehand, know exactly what you want, what you're running in the van, plan it out, how you are going to sleep, which is really important, run your fridge, and, you know, do you want to shower in a bathroom, and draw it all out. And I'd be even inclined to, before you even buy a van, draw it out on the ground with chalk or something and just get a feel for the size of it, you know?
Correct. That was one of the things I used actually was cardboard. A friend of mine was joking, he called this CAD, so it's cardboard aided design. it actually does work, to be honest. I would have made up a lot of the units, the kitchen, even the toilet. I made up two cardboard walls, first of all, to figure out is big enough, you know, will this work, and so on. So even upper shelves also, just because if you were in a very tight space, the width of a storage unit is very important, obviously, for storage. But if it's too big, it gets in the way, it doesn't work, it becomes a problem. So I suppose I wanted to build it once and not remodel it, if you know what I mean. Okay. So yeah, I would advise people to just pick up mock-up cardboard, little tin plate, just rough and ready, stick them together with sellotape and just take it up to the van and see how it looks and feels, you know.
But I don't see any bruises on top of your head, so it's obviously worked anyway. So that's good.
It worked, thankfully. Yes.
Great. Thanks so much for sending on all of that information, Brian. And certainly we'll send out and share.
Yeah,
that.
And as I said to you in the mail, if anyone's stuck for information, whoever, just reach out there on the TikTok, send me a message, and I'll see if I can help him out on the electric server.
If anybody wants to get in touch with Brian, drop us a message and we'll pass on the details. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers.
Wow, that sounds like, never mind the lithium battery end of things, that build sounds perfect for what he needs.
Yeah, yeah. And he's actually put up a TikTok channel as well with lots of videos, so you can actually see it. If you just go to TikTok.com, if you don't have the app, or in the app, his handle is Ruttle001. So in TikTok, he's at RUTTLE001. On TikTok, and you'll find him. I think he might be on Instagram as well with a similar type handle. So have a look out and you can see pictures of his setup. Like, he's gone into great detail on the TikTok and some of the other channels. with the whole wiring diagram and, yeah. and how we went about the build. It's fantastic for anyone considering lithium. And as Brian said himself, like, his system was probably a little bit overkill, but you know, that would be my preference as well. To...
His system is for a van you're going to live in.
Yeah,
it really is. It's a livable van. I know he has an engineering background, but it just shows research, research, research. It really, really, before, whether you're doing a little T3 like I am, whether you're doing an expensive 141 van or an L Transit, do your homework. And like, he must have changed his layout four or five times before he knew this is for me. So well done, Brian. Thank you for that. And I'm looking forward to meeting him on site and getting a look at the actual build. And when you sent me that interview, it just got me thinking, when the Wednesday builds are over, maybe, like, there's still a bit of camping season left and myself and Charlie will still get out, please God. I might try and bump into a few self-build people and maybe do a Wednesday meet the self-builders and literally just let them show us around the van. Like,
yeah.
And I'd love to see Brian's. I'd love Brian to be one of them. Just a quick 6-7 minute tour of a van. I think we'll do that on Wednesdays. If not this season, definitely for season 8.
And you could record part of it in an interview then on the podcast and that as well while you're there.
Yeah.
Just to close out the podcast, I got a WhatsApp message from a couple of friends there during the week. Said, look, before the summer's over, let's get out for a hike, go up the mountain somewhere, camp out and hike overnight. Hike back home then the next day, or maybe even stay out for a second night. So I have most of the real camping gear, Aaron. You know, these are this is real camping we're talking about here now. So I have most of the gear, but the one thing I don't have, all my tents are all big tents. So I'm looking for recommendations for a reasonably priced, lightweight or ultra lightweight hiking tent. Something that won't take up too much space in a backpack, in a bag. Something to take away and pitch, something handy and light, something windproof. One of the mates has suggested the Zephyr One, I think it's called. It's by Wild Camp, I think is the name of the company. But that looks like is one I'm seriously considering as well. But I'd love to hear what people's recommendations are, because I will pick one up.
I'm assuming this is not for you, the missus, two kids and two. This is a single man tent. It's not
These are one person tents. You can't get two person, but you know, one person is also going to be lighter and smaller as well. So just
we're not looking for a family tent.
A few old lads like myself just heading off, kind of reliving our youth again, you know.
So just you have a tent, right? We know you have the tent, but that's a family tent, so that's not suitable.
Yeah, like I have a Van Gogh three person, four person dome tent as well.
Yeah,
and then I have the large kind of family tent with
the one I'm on
porch
about.
And the kitchen area and the two bedrooms at the back, like, you know.
Right. Could you, let's say there's three of you going camping, could you not just bring the one tent and split it between the three of you, you know?
Potentially that's an option as well, but I know two or three lads that are going already have their tents and, when you get to a certain age like yourselves are, and you like to have your own little privacy, your own little space, you know, you're kind of gone beyond the days of sharing with strangers.
Yeah, that's why I have two camper vans. I don't want to share with my wife. So we want your recommendations, please, for a lightweight hiking tent that Chris can purchase and go off hiking.
Reasonably priced. I don't want to spend too much. You can spend a fortune.
So what's reasonably, what's too much?
I would probably think under 200. And reason being is I'm probably only realistically going to use it maybe
twice every two years. No, not every year.
Over a number of years.
Yeah.
I know if I have it, I think I'd go, like, I'd be more interested to go, like, maybe two or three times a year, I would say. So, like, you don't want to spend a fortune if you're not going to get that much use out of it, you know?
You need to contact details to give us your reasonably priced, lightweight, reasonably priced hiking tent. And if there's anything else, maybe you've got toilet hacks or other hacks that Darren has, or you want to talk to us about lithium batteries or anything we've discussed on any of the podcasts, please do get in touch. Remember, we still have a couple of stickers left for your motorhome, your camper van, your caravan, your car. We need your name, your address and your air code, please. We do also post outside of the country, so just give us all of your contact details. But to do that, you've got to get in touch with us, and Chris is our man with the contact details.
Yeah, and we were talking about the van lifers as well. Anyone has done some recent conversions would like to tell us about it, we'd certainly love to do as Aaron said, a couple of videos and have maybe a chat with the podcast side by side as well. So on the web, our webpage is thecampingcrew.ie. On email, we're campingcrewpodcast@gmail.com. on X, or I'm still going to call it Twitter, we're @thecampingcrew. Instagram, we're @thecampingcrewpodcast. On Facebook, you'll find us in all the good motorhome and camping groups. You can send us an audio message from your smartphone to the email that we mentioned earlier, or if you go to our webpage, there's a link there where you can do it as well.
And don't forget, we mentioned earlier on campsitereview.com, we have a forum there. It's free and it always will be. And on Fridays is when we go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/CharlieandMeAreCampingVlog, and we'll start reposting our campsite reviews, hopefully from our new VW campervan over the next couple of weeks. And if you see us on a campsite, do come over and have a look at the van, but do come over and say hi. From me, Aaron Birchall, camp safe.
Yeah, it's a goodbye for me, Chris. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we ask you to subscribe, or more importantly, tell all your camping friends about us.
Well, that's it for another podcast from the Camping Crew. Thanks for listening, and do join us again very soon. Safe camping.